Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Second and third, two down, and the pitch on the way. And a swing and a bouncer to third. Up with it, Sosa. The throw to first is in time. And the Phillies win it. They come back from a 5-0 deficit in the early stages of the game, tie it in the middle innings, and then win it thanks to the home run by Real Muto in the top of the 10th.
If this series goes to Philadelphia at a game apiece, I'm all right with that.
A look back at Altuve and the pitch to Peña. And he'll swing and hit it past Bone down the left field line into the corner. Altuve in to score. Peña takes his place at second. And two pitches into the bottom of the first. The Astros have a 1-0 lead.
It's advantage Astros once you get past the top two in each rotation.
Wheeler, a look back, and now the pitch, and a swing by Alvarez, and a fly ball to left, hit pretty well, Schwarber back, he jumps, and it's over his head and off the wall, Peña around third, he'll come in to score, Alvarez standing at second, three consecutive doubles, and a 2-0 lead for the Astros. The pitch, and a swing and a high fly ball, well hit, left center field, it is gone! Two-run home run to deep left center. And the Astros extend the lead to 5-0. And the 0-1 to Stott. He swings and hits a ground ball to second. Altuve has it. And the throw to first is in time to end the ball game.
Well, we are in the middle of the World Series. They are indeed going to Philadelphia. Tied at a game apiece. The Phillies winners in game one. Coming from 5 runs back against Justin Verlander to steal game one in Houston. They win it 6-5 and 10, but then the Astros with the bounce back. A 3-run first inning in game two on their way to a 5-2 victory and hoping to play game three today. There's some weather in the Philadelphia area. Who knows if they'll actually get the game in, but it's scheduled game three tonight. Over the weekend, Blankers. He's Blankers on Branham. Brendan's behind the glass. Some of his very, very best work. A Monday edition of the Killer Bees. A Halloween edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. More good or more bad from the Astros over the weekend?
I think it's good. I think, you know, as you astutely brought up when we were getting ready to talk about the World Series and the one clip that's in there about a split would be okay. I think that's the challenge that we have doing what we do is dealing with overzealous fan bases for our teams, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But when they get on social media, everything's the end of the world. So you lose game one, it's the end of the world. You win game two, and now they should, you know, they should have won game one. It was only a 1-run game, and now they should, you know, coast to victory. And it's not as simple as that in either case. Was I concerned after game one? Sure, and there was plenty to be concerned with because you blew a 5-run lead because Verlander wasn't great. There was a lot to kind of digest. But did I think that it was over? No. And then the way that they set the tone literally from the first pitch, game two, at least made me believe there was going to be a series. Because the one thing I did want for the sport of baseball, which you and I both love so much, but also as it relates to the Astros, you wanted a series, right?
Oh,
you,
no, I didn't. I couldn't care less about the sport of baseball. I wanted a 4-game sweep. I don't
a
care
four
if the
game
series
sweep
goes deep.
Would have been great, but I'm saying no. Once after you lost game one,
I like the Astros.
I wanted
more than
to
I like
make
baseball.
Sure it was, you know, it was going to be a, it wasn't going to be an embarrassment for the Astros.
Sure.
I wanted it to be long enough.
But that's more about the Astros than baseball.
Okay,
I couldn't care less about baseball, the sport. Like if it went 4 games and Major League Baseball got 0 ratings because of it, I don't care. The Astros are hanging a banner. The Astros are the priority. I agree with you that there was more good than bad. Now, It's still like fair to say that there was bad in game one. Like there, there's very much negative of game one. But overall, first two games of the series, I stand by what I said last week. You take this series to Philadelphia, tied at a game apiece. I like the Astros' chances. McCullers, Syndergaard, fingers crossed tonight. Javier, Ranger tomorrow in game four. And then you have a rematch of Justin Verlander, Nola game five. The whole path that I carved out for the Astros to win this series was actually to split the first two games at home, take two of three at Philadelphia, which won't be easy because Philadelphia has not lost at Citizens Bank Park this playoffs. They're 5-0, but take two of three, win the series there, come back home, and you have two games at home to win one. So I'm fine overall. And look, the overall feeling after game one is a bad one. Like, I get that. You lose the game after you lead 5-0. You have Justin Verlander on the mound. You should win that game. That's a fact. Both things can be true. But also that you did split. You get the bounce back game, which is great. There's a lot of good stuff that also happened in game one outside of Justin Verlander. Your bullpen did pretty good. Luis Garcia gave up the home run to Real Muto. I'm sure we'll get into the Dusty Baker conversation at some point. But overall, the bullpen did well outside of Luis Garcia. Kyle Tucker hit a couple of home runs. You scored 5 runs against Aaron Nola. That should be enough to get you a victory. Basically, you did enough to win outside of one bad performance by Justin Verlander.
Well, that's
so
my,
overall positive.
My biggest point was, again, when you look at social media, the sky was falling. It was over. Dusty should be fired. Verlander shouldn't be brought
back.
Well,
Dusty didn't manage a good game.
Well, okay, but it wasn't Dusty's fault that they blew a 5-run lead, I don't think, either. I think that, you know, that is the dynamic within the locker room. We don't know about just how dominant Justin Verlander can be when he controls or dictates too much about when he should stay and when he should go and what he should do. But overall, my point is that people were losing their mind and saying, again, because the sky was falling, all these things were like, you know, there's no gray area, right? They have to go, and this is terrible, and this is going to be an embarrassment.
Mm.
And instead, you lost a 1-run game in extra innings that you started out and got, you know, you got Tucker going that wasn't going previously. You had a lot to be positive about, but because you lost and you lost in extra innings by 1 run, that was a race, you lost. And so it was doomsday. And then you come back in game two, and then the same people are suddenly believing that there's sunshine and rainbows and this is the team of, you know, the team of destiny again, but this is a team that's going to do quick work at the Phillies, which I think the one thing that people are sleeping on too much is the Houston crowd's great. But the Philly crowd is different. It's an overzealous, passionate, maybe over the top, that's going to be a different environment to play in. So taking 2 out of 3 in Philly ain't going to be a cakewalk by any stretch. But what we said was, at least what I said when we were having the conversation, is where the Astros truly have the advantage is after you got through the first two starters for Philadelphia. This is where you're supposed to make your hay, and you have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I think that's why I lean more good than bad, more positive than negative. But that's not to say that there weren't some negative things along the way as well. But going to Philadelphia, you're in a good spot. I love the response you saw in game two, and you alluded to it. The 3 straight doubles to start against their ace, Zach Wheeler. He is their best pitcher. Didn't look like their
sure
best
didn't.
Pitcher. First time in World Series history that a team started a game with 3 extra base hits. Great to see Jose Altuve get it all kickstarted. You hang a 3 spot in the first inning after there were some nervous moments. And you brought up like the fans' point of view. Like, there's fanaticals, right? You're going to be like, some people are going to overreact and over exaggerate. Some people are going to underreact and under exaggerate. Like, it goes both ways. Going into game two, there's some fear there, though, because I mean, if you lose both games, and look, Zach Wheeler's capable of beating the Houston Astros. So going into that game before first pitch was ever thrown, yeah, Philadelphia has a chance to go up
2-0 in the
series.
Some people said it was a do or die game for the Astros. And as long as it was an extremely important game.
Yeah.
But because this team is as talented as it is, I'm not going to say the series would have been over. It would have been a very, very steep hill to climb.
I thought about, like, you know, before the game, what if the Astros do lose this game? Yeah. The Astros are capable of going to Philadelphia and coming back from 2-0. I don't like using past World Series as examples because it's 2 totally different teams that are playing versus the 2 totally different teams that were playing then. But the Astros lost. Every home team lost in 2019 when the Astros were playing the Nationals. So I think the Astros are capable of doing it, but it does add that you know, the value, the weight, the impact of
it wouldn't have been insurmountable, but it would have been a hell of a challenge.
Exactly. It wasn't quite must win, but it was like, dang, we better win this game from an Astros perspective. So, like, I look at the positives of game two more than I look at the overall negative game one. And I also think you can kind of cherry pick some positives from game one. The fact that you jump up 5-0 on Nola, huge, huge victory. Kyle Tucker got it going. And I know that the offense didn't really produce the rest of the way. I think part of that was they were stunned. I think the crowd was stunned in game one that you're up 5-0, you're cruising to a 1-0 victory in the World Series, and then Justin Verlander somehow gives up 5 runs and blows the lead.
I think you hit on it. In that dugout, once you got the 5 spot,
They
thought, hey, we're on cruise control now. We don't have to go out there with our best at-bats. We don't have to go out there and like really focus and dial in because we got this thing. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, they're looking at it and looking at the scoreboard and going, oh, bleep, we got ourselves a ball game. We got to dial back in, and that's hard to do.
See, Ocho mentions that home run off Garcia was similar to the Howie Kendrick home run off of Will Harris, just a good piece of hitting. Okay, you can tip your cap to Real Muto on that home run. He also knew fastball was coming because Luis Garcia was ahead of Real Muto 1-2 and threw back-to-back non-competitive breaking balls in the dirt that Real Muto spit on. So you can't walk the runner there. So Real Muto knows that he's getting fastball. So, like, it is good hitting. Real Muto took an outside half fastball, drove it over the wall in right field. You tip your cap to that. But it is also poor execution by Luis Garcia. Maybe not on 3-2, but on 1-2 and on 2-2 that he was throwing a couple of non-competitive breaking balls that allow Real Muto to get into that spot. So I didn't love Luis Garcia in that spot either,
I didn't love bringing him in there.
I wanted Stanek in the 10th inning, and then if Stanek got you through the 10th, then that's when you turn it over
to Luis Garcia. Then you realize it might be a marathon, not a sprint, and then you would get Garcia going. But, yeah, I didn't like him coming in there in the first place, though he had a plus-plus fastball faster than maybe he had been, you know, all season. And it's about as fast as it's been lately when he's been getting these shorter relief stints. But when you look at it, you say, this is what Luis Garcia does normally early in games. If anything, he struggles with counts. He gets behind one way or another. Like you said, either he, in the middle of a count, he puts himself in a hole by not making non-competitive pitches, or he starts out a count with like a 2-0 count, and he normally gets touched up with home runs early in games when he's doing those things.
Yeah.
And it's also from the Real Muto standpoint, a lot of hitters are too stubborn to go the other way. But, you know, Chaz McCormick has literally made a season off of this and a career. But the fact that real good hitters just sit back and go, it doesn't matter where I hit the fastball, as long as I hit the fastball, took it the other way and put it over the railing. I mean, that you deal with that when you set yourself up by getting the wrong count from a guy that was trying to settle in.
713-780-ESPN. More good, more bad with the Astros taking the series to Philadelphia at a game apiece. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at PacManJoel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
More good, more bad in the first two games of the series, the World Series, as they head to Philly at a game apiece. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there now for Jonathan. Jonathan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's on your mind?
Hey, yes, we talk about the Philadelphia Phillies fans, but, I mean, we must have to be idiots sometimes to think we're 30 games above the Astros, above 500 in the regular season, the best record in the majors, 8-1 in the postseason. And to say Dusty is not, I mean, for some people to nitpick at Dusty.
Well, Dusty didn't manage a very good game one of the World Series. It was the first time this postseason that he did not manage a good game.
Let me finish.
Well, I understand that you called, and we'll let you finish, but it is also our show, Jonathan. This is not the Killer Jonathan's. We'll let you finish, but we'll also interact with you, the caller, who is calling in to our radio show. This was the first game one of the World Series, in which Dusty Baker did a subpar job. The rest of the games, he's been very good. I think overall, he's been very good, Jonathan.
You talk all day, sir, but give me a minute.
I'll give you a minute.
The guys, it's not his fault if you can't score one additional run or blow a 5-run lead. You put those same players in position that got you the best record in football, baseball, and had you 8-0 or 6-0 at the time.
Jonathan,
let me
ask you this. Oh, he hung up. Go figure. He wants to have his minute, but he doesn't want to go back.
Give him a minute, Jeremy.
Jonathan, call back. We'll give you an extra minute. 713-780-3776. Dusty Baker is not the most at fault for what happened in game one of the World Series. I agree with Jonathan. there's way more blame on Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander deserves like 95% of the blame in that loss, maybe even more. Mm-hmm. You hand Justin Verlander, the ace of your staff, the Cy Young in 2022, and he has another Justin Verlander World Series moment. He was 100%. He was 95% at fault for Game 1's loss. I agree with you, Jonathan. The other 3%, 4% was on the offense. You do need to tack on runs in the playoffs, and the Astros were terrible with runners in scoring position in that game. Jose Altuve came up early in that game, runners at first and third, one out. Tack a run on. How important is that in the World Series? How many times were they up with two outs, runners in scoring position? They didn't come through. So again, Jonathan, I agree with you that there's more blame for the offense than Dusty. Way more blame on Justin Verlander than Dusty. I think Dusty Baker, look, he didn't lose that game, but I think that Dusty Baker could have salvaged Game 1 of the World Series, and the Astros came out ahead with some moves that he would have made. The most obvious one is the handling of Justin Verlander. We can also talk about the Luis Garcia in the 10th instead of Ryan Stanek, all of that, but like the game was already tied at that point. Dusty Baker could have salvaged that victory for the Houston Astros, despite it being Justin Verlander's fault primarily, despite the offense deserving some blame as well. Dusty Baker left Justin Verlander in that game too long. Dusty Baker's greatest strength as a manager was his greatest weakness in Game 1 of the World Series. He is loyal to a fault. We've seen it pay off this year. Yuli Gurriel, that has paid off. Tip my cap to Dusty Baker, deserves all sort of credit for how Yuli Gurriel has performed in the playoffs. Jeremy Peña, a lot of people are ready to quit on Jeremy Peña. Move him down in the order. I'm sick and tired of seeing Jeremy Peña swell at two-strike pitches out of the zone. What did Dusty Baker do? Moved him to the two spot, ALCS MVP, tip my cap to Dusty Baker for the handling of Jeremy Peña. Dusty Baker made a poor decision leaving Justin Verlander in the game to try to pitch the fifth inning. He was loyal to JV, trying to give him his first ever World Series victory. Dusty would tell you later that he didn't know about that. I'm not so sure about that. As soon as Brandon Marsh led off the fifth inning with a double, that was the time to take Justin Verlander out of the game. He didn't deserve a third time through the order, and at that point, five of the last six Phillies had reached. You had to pull Verlander there.
But here's the other thing, Jeremy. It's not just about Dusty Baker pulling him there, because I don't disagree with you. It's the fact that you also, all season long, as an organization, empowered Justin Verlander a little too much. And it's what we see about these prima donna pitchers that don't want to be talked to on game day. That's one thing. But during other portions of the game, you have to be able to communicate with your starting pitcher and let him know, hey, man, I know what you got going on. I know, you know, whether you admit it publicly or not, I know about these streaks and these other things. But I can't let us lose a lead in game one that we have really looked, you know, worked hard to get. And the fact that I believe that Verlander, the same way he treated Josh Miller during the season when he came out for a mound visit that he didn't appreciate and then gave up a home run two pitches later, was the same thing that I think all that coaching staff had in the back of their mind about questioning whether they could go out and try and pull Justin Verlander when they've empowered him too much to be able to basically dictate everything and anything that he wants to do. He was ripe for the picking and he should have been taken out. And that is the exact right baseball move. But unfortunately, they've catered too much to the Hall of Fame pitcher and a side stat about how bad he's been in the World Series and the fact that they've allowed him to dictate basically everything about his season, from when he pitches, how many days rest, how many pitches, everything else, including when he comes out and who goes to talk to him. And I think that they tried to tiptoe a little too much and they got caught.
713-780-ESPN. Gary's back on
the
line. Which is good.
Jonathan.
I want to talk to Gary.
What's his real name?
Let's go out to the Hive. Gary, what's up?
Hey, yeah. Well, you know when those people go to the hotel, the stars, the superstars, they don't give their real name. So because I'm a superstar, I don't give my real name.
I respect that, Gary.
Anyway, now, like I was saying that, okay, at the end of the day, 5-5, we're still in it. We're the home team. Yeah. And no matter what happens, give me one run. Sure, Verlander is a prima donna. Sure, LeBron, every superstar athlete in most sports are handled differently by all coaches. But to be 30-something games over, whatever. You say he was loyal. Most people are loyal to their superstar players in every sport.
Yeah.
That did not – loyalty did – loyalty did not lose that game for us.
Ooh.
It was leaving men on first and third.
Gary, let me –
it
look,
was leaving people on
– let me
Gary,
jump in real quick.
No loyalty,
let me jump
you in pull them out with a two-run lead.
Gary, let me jump in real quick. Because, look, Gary, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think that you were still listening. Yeah, almost all of the blame falls on Verlander. Yes, the offense deserves some blame, too, for not tacking on. I completely agree. I'm not really blaming Dusty. I'm saying that Dusty could have salvaged that game. How long would you have let Verlander go?
Okay, let me answer.
How long?
To answer that, now, if they watch this, if they pull him, because we can do if all day.
Dusty, you're not answering, Gary. You've got to answer the question, Gary.
I'm answering it. If they pull him and then they give it up, and they give it up, the bullpen gives it up, like they did in the 10th or 12th inning, then we're going to the guy can figure it out. Roger Clemens said it this morning on the show. Roger Clemens said this morning, sometimes they get it back in gear after inning or a batter or so.
Yeah.
And that's what great pitchers do.
So when would you have pulled him?
I wouldn't have pulled him at that
all right,
time.
So you would have let him go through the fifth
inning.
All right.
Gary, let me ask you a question. Has Dusty done anything wrong all year?
Bullpen. I'm not going to my bullpen in the fourth inning.
Oh, I am.
Has Dusty done anything wrong all year, Gary? Because I know you're a massive supporter, but you have to be a realist.
No, it's not Gary this time. It's Jonathan.
Oh, but
same difference.
34 games above 500.
Has he done anything wrong?
All right.
Johnny.
Appreciate the call, Gary, and I do enjoy the back and forth. He didn't pull JV in the fourth. I'm not even calling him to pull JV in the fourth. I'm calling him to pull him after the fifth inning. And to Gary's point and Roger's point, that you give him a chance to bounce back. You give him an up-down. Fine. He got out of the fourth inning. He still has the two-run leader. It might have been a three-run lead at that point. I can't remember. Let's see real quick. No, it was a two-run lead.
I said he should have gone after he was down to a two-run game.
After the I think they, like, to Gary's point, I give Justin Verlander the fifth.
You let him come out.
Like, I let him come out, see if he figured it out. He didn't. He gave up a double to Brandon Marsh. He had given up five of the last six Phillies in the lineup to reach base. You don't deserve a third trip to the lineup. That was the time to pull him. Dusty didn't. Schwarber then walks, and then a couple batters later, Real Muto ties it up with the double off the wall in left center. So again, I agree with you, Gary. I'm okay with Justin Verlander coming out for the fifth. I am not okay to allow Justin Verlater to continue going after he gives up a leadoff double to the nine-hole hitter and didn't deserve a third time through the order.
I'm done after Marsh hit the double. And you still had a two-run lead is what I meant. You still had a two-run lead and you could salvage it to where you weren't playing from tied or behind, that's what you need to do. Because as easy as Gary seems to think it is to put it on the offense, it's like I revert back to what I said previously during this show today, which is, some of the toughest things for real professionals to do is when you build up a big lead, it's like in basketball when you get a 30-point lead and suddenly the team makes a big run and they make it a game again. It's hard to flip the switch and get it back into killer mode where, you know, which you use to get up 30. I think a lot of these guys in the offense felt like they had game one in their pocket when Tucker hit the second bomb and thought, okay, let's start thinking about game two. And then all of a sudden they got a game on their hands and you did leave JV in and you did get tied and you were in a dogfight and you weren't ready for the fight at that point because you had already basically kind of relaxed and said, we got this one.
Yeah, Infuin says, even the most casual fan could see that JV was mentally done after he gave off that leadoff double. He was missing pitches in the fourth. Like, I know that he was perfect through three. I didn't think he was that sharp through three. I know he was getting dudes out, but he was leaving the breaking balls up. And when Justin's leaving breaking balls up, it's going to be tough for him to get dudes out. Secondly, like, after that March double especially, didn't it seem like a miracle every time Justin Verlander got somebody out at that
and
point?
He was really going deep into the tank, too. He was trying to up the fastball because he knew that he didn't have the command of the breaking pitch. So, you know, it's one of two ways. He reinvented himself the last outing where he basically changed his breaking pitches and went to something else, a more of a 12-6 curveball and a slower off-speed curveball, trying to get an off-speed pitch that could work keeping the hitter off balance because his other pitches weren't. But then he started emptying the tank on the fastball, and you knew he didn't have many innings left. He didn't have many batters left at that point.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Every Monday at 12:30, we take out the trash. Straight Trash, homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Clean up on all fives.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want trash!
Clean it up.
It's Straight Trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
We'll get right back to the Astros in 15 minutes, but we got some trash to clean up. Some stray trash, homie, presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals. The Houston Texans yesterday, they only lost by a possession. They were an onside kick away from having the football with down by a possession late in that game at NRG Stadium. Do you want to lead us off with some trash that we need to clean out?
Yeah. The entire 2022 Houston Texans season. It is going to be trash. It is going to embrace the suck, whether you like it or not. And you're going to have to realize that a team until the final drive and a final garbage touchdown to Brandon Cooks was in jeopardy of not being able to put 200 total yards on the board. It's embarrassing.
I don't think they did, right? They finished 161.
It was close. I thought the pass play to Cooks of 40 yards or whatever.
They had 161 yards of total offense yesterday. 90 of them came on the final drive.
That's what I said. Besides that final drive, it was an embarrassment all game long. All the Mills Mafia need, it's a hard pill to swallow, but you better get a big glass of water and you better wash it down. And the straight trash to me is the fact that the fan base, there was still a good portion of the fan base that believed this team could be fighting for a playoff spot and could be competing this season.
People thought that?
Oh, my God. Everybody that didn't want to embrace the suck. Everybody thought with the new playoff format, this team could be one of those last wild cards in. This team could definitely take the over on 4.5. Well, it's a hard dose of reality to swallow.
You know, I have a lot of issues from yesterday's game. A lot of them actually deal with the response more than it actually did with the Texans play, which was obviously very bad. Straight trash, homie, presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals. And I agree with you. This 2022 season for the Houston Texans, this is why we told you to embrace the suck. That way you don't get ticked off when the Texans play like yesterday. Because yesterday wasn't only possible, it was probable, and it's more than likely going to happen again for the Houston Texans, and probably more than once, probably more than twice down the stretch with the rest of the way. If you start to kind of categorize some of the areas, you alluded to the offense yesterday, which had 161 total yards, 90 of them coming on the final drive of the game. From top to bottom, the offense was abysmal. The game plan was abysmal. The play calling by Pep Hamilton was abysmal. How about Rex Burkhead throwing the football on first down? You have your third down running back in Rex Burkhead, and he's your first down quarterback. He's a modern-day Cordell Stewart in this offense under Pep Hamilton. But the offense was terrible. Kenyon Green, who is, like, I think one of the highlights of this offense, I think he has play where he's really good. I think he has some play where he's really bad. He's a rookie. You expect that. Yesterday was one of his worst games, and he had probably will be his most embarrassing NFL moment when he got just taken back off the line and basically tackled Damian Pierce himself after he got blown up at the line. The offense was terrible. Davis Mills was terrible. The play calling was worse. And even a bright spot in Damian Pierce this entire season, and you can't put this on Damian Pierce. You got to put it on the game plan, the scheme, and the offensive line blocking for him. At 35 yards on 15 carries for the rookie. A terrible day for offense. One of the worst offensive performances that you can remember in Houston Texans franchise history.
Let's go to the next obvious one of many obvious ones, and that would be the Titans' strength would be the running game of Derrick Henry. The glaring weakness and the trash of it all would be the run defense of the Houston Texans. For those that took the over on Derrick Henry, it was an easy bet to win as he was over 100 yards in the first half. You knew what they were going to do. You still couldn't stop them with a rookie quarterback that did not throw for 100 yards, I don't believe. And yet you still let Derrick Henry be a freight train and Mack truck your ass on every single time he touched the ball.
This one's tough because I blame the offense more than the defense yesterday, but the running defense for the Texans has been abysmal the entire season. It's one thing that's kind of frustrating when you look at the whole Lovie Smith defense, where last year they were the second worst defense in the NFL, and I don't think there's a whole lot of improvement, even though the players are a little bit better. The Texans gave up over 300 yards on the ground yesterday. To make matters worse, Derrick Henry is setting records, right? Derrick Henry, 219 yards in that game yesterday. He has 6 200-yard, 2-touchdown games. 4 of those come against the Houston Texans. It's amazing what he does to the Texans. But you kind of saw it coming. What makes matters worse is that the Titans started Malik Willis at quarterback. And Vrabel early in the game was trying to get Malik Willis involved. He was trying to get him into the game. And then he threw that horrendous interception to Steven Nelson. And after that, Mike Vrabel basically shut down the passing game. So you knew that the Titans were not going to throw the football. They viewed Malik Willis throwing the football, the Titans did, as a negative. So you know they're not throwing the ball. Despite knowing that they're not going to throw the ball, the Titans run for 314 yards against that Swiss cheese Houston Texans defense ran by Lovie Smith for the second year in a row.
My next one is the obvious one every single week. It always comes up. It hasn't changed, and it got worse. It didn't get better, and that is Davis Mills. Davis Mills, for all of your fan base, that same kind of the same fans that were basically holding out hope that he could be your franchise quarterback and this could be the year that they really turn the corner and like I said, flirt with a successful season. That's not going to happen. And Davis Mills is not going to be your franchise quarterback. Now, could he be a quarterback in the NFL someday? Sure. Could he be a backup? Sure. But is he the starting quarterback as a franchise quarterback for the Houston Texans for the long haul? Absolutely not. And he took steps back again yesterday. Literally, he took steps back and got sacked twice by Michael Jackson moonwalking into sacks. But he holds the ball too long. He makes the same mistakes week in, week out. And he does not lead this team on scoring drives, which I said would be another way of seeing progress without wins in the win column.
Yeah, he did not look good yesterday. Coming off a game in which he looked all right against the Raiders. I think played his best game of the year against the Raiders. So you're like, okay, you're coming back home. Let's see what you got. Didn't help that Nico Collins was hurt. The Titans have a pretty good defense. Like they weren't playing one of the worst defenses
Simmons
in the NFL.
All over the place.
And Simmons just blasted Kenyon Green a couple of times, especially the one I was talking about, the Damian Pierce run up the middle. Davis Mills was atrocious yesterday. It started with that interception that he had. And then on top of that, listening to him in the press conference afterwards, like it's kind of deflecting blame. Oh, it was poorly executed. Not too much I could do about that. We have the next game against the Titans circled on our calendar. I heard Paul talking about this in his little TikTok video. It's like Brock Osweiler all over again. Now, it's not the same in terms of like their talent, not the same in the roster that they have around them, because Brock Osweiler, I think, had better targets around him, DeAndre Hopkins, than Davis Mills does. But the way that he just kind of reasons and like describes his decisions are kind of frustrating, where it's like, oh, you know, whatever. Not much I could have done about that. Oh, it was poorly executed. It's almost like he's deflecting a bit, which is annoying considering his play yesterday was really, really bad. Davis Mills just is that type of quarterback where at very best case scenario, right? Best case scenario, Davis Mills is like the 25th best quarterback in the world. When you have a quarterback who's bottom 5-7 in the entire league, what do you need around that quarterback? You need a really good team around that quarterback. Like Ryan Tannehill. I think Ryan Tannehill is better than Davis Mills, but Ryan Tannehill has players around him, right? He's got Derrick Henry, an all-pro running back. He's got a very, very good defense. He's got a really good head coach in Mike Vrabel. I'm not like saying that Davis Mills can't be a quarterback like that, bottom five starter in the league, but that's best case scenario. And that type of quarterback has to have incredible talent around him. Texans don't have incredible talent around him, and Davis Mills right now, he's even playing like that type of quarterback.
No running back, no matter how good he turns out to be, can save a quarterback's ass when a quarterback plays that badly and does the kind of things that he does. And you can say Nico Collins wasn't out there, and you could say that, you know, he hasn't been on the same page all year. That's fine, but there's still a way to play quarterback that shows that you get it, that you're progressing, that you're the kind of, you know, that you're making the strides personally that are going to affect the rest of the team positively. We haven't seen any of that. And so at a certain point, you just have to kind of be okay with the reality that this isn't going to turn out to be the guy, but you're going to have two very high picks to possibly get the guy that could be the guy. And that's what you have to focus on instead of the overly hopeful fans all season long hoping this was the guy that turns out to be the franchise quarterback.
Math on our Twitch is saying, does Cooks get moved before tomorrow? Is Brandon Cooks belong on Straight Trash, homie? Does he need to be the trash that we're cleaning up for the Houston Texans ahead of tomorrow's trade deadline?
I mean, look, I think that his attitude has been trash. The way that he is in until he's not, and when he's not, then he starts doing things that are very childish in liking things that says he should be traded and doesn't show up for his press conferences to talk when he normally talks and does the kind of things that more of a prima donna guy does than a true team guy full of culture. I think that they'd love to move him. The dead cap hit and the financial ramifications are going to be big factors for not only the Texans but the team that takes him on. So it's going to be tougher than you think to move him. But I think that at this is the point in the season when the Texans have to face the reality of there are guys that don't want to be there, that aren't helping you and aren't not going to be scheduled to be part of your long-term successful future that you can move on from.
That contract belongs on Straight Trash Homie, yep. Presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals, because that's one that Nick Caserio would like to have back.
No question.
That contract, I think, makes him unmovable. I also think that yesterday, him being active is a huge tell that they're not going to move him. He showed up on the injury report on Friday with... Right, but it was a full participant, and he was questionable for Sunday. So going into the game, if he doesn't play, it's okay. He's probably going to get traded. But that they played him yesterday, I think, is a huge tell that they're not going to trade him. I think his contract is a huge tell that they're not going to trade him. And even if they do trade him, because of that contract, they're going to get a return that the entire city would be ticked off about if they do trade Brandon Cooks.
Welcome to a sixth-round pick.
Yeah. I think that's best case scenario. Well, I think fifth's probably best case scenario, but sixth is highest likely.
Even a fifth, the city's not going to be accepting.
Oh, they'd be ticked off.
They're going to be, and they're not going to understand what all goes into it. But look, I think Tunsil's a guy that I thought that they should move on. You disagree?
Yeah.
I just think at this point, from where they are as a team and what they're trying to do or not do, I don't think Tunsil being around is going to help the locker room or the play on the field enough. So if someone's willing to give you something for him at this point, I think you bail out from him too.
Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. Back to the Astros in just a bit. Dusty's logic on Stanek. Fromber and the sticky stuff. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, because that is Straight Trash Homie brought to you by Vivia, I want to tell you about the good people at Vivia Dumpster Rentals, because Vivia has been coming through to take out the trash for all of you across the city of Houston, and they will do it when you need them most, when you're doing a renovation project, when you're cleaning out the garage and the attic, and you thought about all the different ways that you're going to create space and do kind of new and improved things with your house. You probably didn't think about the trash and the stuff that you're getting rid of and how you're going to get rid of it permanently. That's where Vivia comes in. Go to govavia.com, that's govavia.com, and see all the ways they can help you, because they can bring a 10-yard or a 15-yard roll-off dumpster to you and take it away the same day. It'll fit comfortably in your driveway. It's attractive enough to keep away the HOA, and your neighbors won't be upset because you're doing what you're supposed to do, cleaning up right away, on time, having the dumpster show up in the morning, leave at night, and taking away all the unsightly trash and waste that you don't want to be hanging around. 5-star service. Same day delivery. All you got to do is contact them. govavia.com. They do it not only just for the people in your neighborhood that are doing renovations. They do it for people like Texas Custom Patios too. They do it for businesses working on projects that need somebody reliable to take away all the waste and the excess. That's what Vivia does. Our ESPN crew uses them at our golf tournament. You should use them too whenever you have anything going on that involves getting rid of trash and in need of a dumpster. Tell them you heard it on ESPN 97.5. It's govavia.com. That's govavia.com.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bob Nightingale, who is a bit of a hero today
in the
city of Houston. He'll be on with us tomorrow, by the way.
Great get, Brendan.
Big shot Bob with the Killer Bees tomorrow. He is Killer Bee after
pretty regular with us.
He just tweeted out, MLB officials are scheduled to meet with the Phillies and Astros at 2:30 today to provide a weather update to determine whether Game 3 can be played or to try to play through the rain that is forecast throughout the evening. So a couple hours away from that meeting between Major League Baseball, the Phillies, and the Astros. I looked at the weather. It's light rain, and it starts at like 7:45. So
when I saw 60% chance of the three games, this had the highest chance of precipitation.
Yeah.
And then we have Killer Bee fans in Philly. At least we have friends that we work with here whose dad still lives in Philly, who was telling us they don't think that they're going to play that game tonight.
Precipitation, though, doesn't mean...
That's a bit of a concern.
I mean, 60% of rain doesn't mean that it's going to be rain enough to, like, not have the game.
But if there's going to be delays and everything like that, then the networks get involved, and then, you know, the powers that be try to move their weight around a little more than usual in terms of should we play or shouldn't we.
Well, it's going to come down to can they play through this rain, because the rain's going to start like at 7:45 and it's not going to stop. Like it's going to be light rain starting at 7:45 and continuing until like the wee hours of tomorrow morning, like 5, 6 a.m.
in Philadelphia. Looking at the weather, like it's light green cells. I'm not a meteorologist or any of that. Some people think it is going to get played, and some people don't. So really, it's up in the air what happens with that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Tom wants in. Tom, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
What's up, Tom?
Hey, just wanted to talk about, I think game one may have been the best thing that happened for the Astros. They came out strong, and they thought they had it covered. I think Verlander should have been pulled, and there's a lot of stuff that could have gone on, but I think it brought them back to earth a little bit. I mean, this team's been on a roll big time, and sometimes you just got to have a little self-check. And I think we're going to go ahead and take care of business the rest of the way. And they should play in the rain tonight. This is baseball. We used to do it when we were kids.
That's right, Tom. I remember those days, playing in the rain, back with the old leather gloves. Catchers didn't have, you know, catcher's mask, didn't use a helmet.
You had the Charlie Brown mitt, right, that didn't have a pocket. It was just flat with padding.
Yeah. I mean, all of that. I think that Tom has a point. As far as, like, rejuvenating the team, I don't think that they needed that. I love the response. Like, you get punched in the face, you want to see how you bounce back. I love the bounce back by the Astros that they showed in game two. I don't think that they need a rally cry, you know, going into this World Series. The fact is, they punched first. They were up 5-0. They had a couple home runs from Kyle Tucker off of Nola, and then Justin Verlander pitched very, very poorly. We had Corey text in a little bit earlier because Gary called us about the offense, and he said, the offense is not to blame. 5 runs is 5 runs. Who cares where they got them? I agree with that. You give Justin Verlander 5 runs, he should win that game. And he didn't. And the Dusty Baker side of it, too, is like, I think he could have salvaged it. I'm not necessarily putting blame on Dusty Baker. I think he could have salvaged it if he pulled JV out. And the spot that I'm pulling JV out was after that Brandon Marshall leadoff double to begin the fifth inning.
Yeah, look, at least Verlander owned up to it. But what else can he do, right? You know, you can try and be in denial all you want. But the fact is, you've never blown a 5-run lead before. And you did. And you did suck. And you weren't on your A game. And you know, it's at a point in the season where everybody knows your previous records, no matter when they occurred and when you were in the World Series last. And it's time you either put up or face the music, and the music's getting louder, and it's a problem. And that's something that, again, like I said, as a team, you have to try and come together and overcome together, because no one guy is going to overcome that for you. And blowing a 5-run lead is not something that anybody's proud of or anybody thought was going to happen, but it did. What they really did to show their true colors was the way they came out in game two. The way they didn't even leave it to chance in the middle innings, again, with a big lead. But they started setting the tone right literally from the first pitch. And then the fact by the end of the game, you saw your guy struggling more than anybody had 3 hits in Altuve. Tucker came out of it in game one and showed that he's got his swing back where it needs to be. Whereas everybody else that you needed to see those things continue from, for the most part, continues to do it. So you're in a good spot. But you can't take your foot off the gas. And if anything, maybe to the caller's point, you learned a valuable lesson that this is the World Series. This isn't a series in July against even a good team. This is the do or die, end all be all, and the big daddy of them all, where if you got a lead of 5, you got to push for 7. You saw a little of that in game 2, where they were still aggressive on the base paths and trying to do things when they had the lead because they learned a lesson. And I hope that's the one thing you can walk away from, a loss that should have been a win in game 1.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Going back out there with Rudy. Rudy, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Rudy?
Hey, guys. JV was throwing a no-hitter, and then the announcer goes and talks to Dusty during the inning, and that's when he came back and gave up that base hit, right after they talked to Dusty and gave up the hit.
Are you saying there was an announcer jinx, Rudy?
Is that the reason why it all fell apart, Rudy?
Yes, when it was fell apart, when they were talking to Dusty, and they said, he's throwing a no-hitter. What do you think, Dusty? Dusty smiles like he wanted to knock him out, talking about the no-hitter again.
I appreciate the call,
There's a difference
Rudy.
between giving up a hit and then giving up the entire five
runs. I did notice it. I don't know if you guys
did. I
did,
too. Oh, no, I definitely
stood out.
Yep. I paid attention to it.
I don't like the in-game interviews. I'm not going to sit here and say that the five-run lead was because
I got
of
into
the
it
Fox in a, interview.
I think it's the only plausible explanation.
if we believe that Justin, our songs can actually turn pitchers' seasons around.
Verlander's
then,
career World Series ERA has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it.
That would make no sense.
As it relates to the in-dugout interviews during games, I got into a conversation with Raul from Cobos Q and Owen Confuente, of all people, during the game where I said, you can call me that guy. You can say I'm get off your my lawn guy. I hate those in-game interviews because, one, they're never going to give you what you're looking for. They're never going to give you either bulletin board material or the honesty that you want. And, two, the dugout has always been a sacred spot where you can relax, be yourself. You're not constantly on watch. And I, it's one thing when there's nothing on the line during an all-star game. It's another thing when you're in the World Series and you're coming off all the emotions, highs, lows, and otherwise, and you're expected while the inning is still going on to talk to the media. I don't think there's any place for it. I understand that from a network television perspective, they think it's an added benefit that people are looking for. I just don't think I like it at all, and I don't think there's a place for it in the World Series.
I don't like either one. I like the players less. Like, you want to do
what do you mean either one?
I don't like either interview, but they're interviewing players now, too.
That's what I'm saying. I don't like, you're talking about the manager or the
player? Between the two, I don't like either one.
I cannot stand the player one. I understand the manager a little more, but even still, I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of either one, but if I had to choose one that stays, I would choose the manager one. I don't like the dudes talking in the dugout while the game's going on after they hit a home run. I do not like that at all.
And just, you know, whether you know it or not, they record the interview with the manager before the inning starts. But it does, you know. But it doesn't matter. They're still not going to give you what you're looking for. I mean, Rob Thompson almost he got as honest as you're going to get out of him in terms of what he saw in leaving Nola out there and doing what he did, going to his bullpen. But for the most part, it's basically the Bull Durham hole. Hopefully, I can help the team. Good Lord willing, everything works out in the end, like which Bregman did. There's no value in that, and I don't believe the players should have to do it, want to do it, and I get that. I totally get it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I'm looking at this weather, the little forecast in Philly. It's looking a little bit worse than it did when I looked at it this morning. I'm not thinking there's going to be baseball tonight. Just a hunch, just a feeling.
Who does that help?
We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, sorry.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, man, what's the deal with it, fellas? I don't understand why the caller Jerry or Jonathan or whatever his name is, don't get what you guys are saying, man. You know, the margin of error right now, and Pac-Man, Joel kind of hit on this. Say, man, we ain't talking about no July or June or May. Everything that Jerry and Jonathan was saying, or Jonathan was saying, yeah, it makes sense in May or June or July. Yeah, I can get on that. We're talking about the World freaking Series, man. You gotta approach that game totally different. But I did what I want to ask you guys because I don't remember right now. What did the Phillies do with their pitcher? Did they pull him after five?
Nola, they left him in, right?
I'm talking about after five hits.
Nola kind of settled down in game one. He gave it the five runs in the two, and then he kind of settled down a little bit, got to the fifth inning. They pulled him after four and a third. Now, Zach Wheeler, I mean, they're kind of both their aces. Like, they're kind of a 1A, 1B type of thing. Wheeler's had slightly better numbers than Nola did this year. They left Wheeler in for five innings, too. But I think that they had to get deeper in that game because of how they handled game one. Thompson was very aggressive with his bullpen in game one.
I don't want to say emptied the tank, but he used his best.
I would say he did empty the tank.
Yeah.
Okay. Going back to the Jerry Jonathan caller and him talking about, you know, we up 30 games. Say, man, we're in a World Series.
Yeah.
If a team is there right now, they mean you could throw all of that record crap out of the window. That means that they are good. You just can't go in there and say we won our crappy division by 30 games, so you know we can just rest on our laurels. And expect everybody to come through. I don't even see why there's even an issue with this. I'm out.
Appreciate Lamont.
He's gone.
Lamont, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you watch the game two, or did we shame you into watching it again, or did you go back?
No. And I blame you guys.
I know you did. That's why I want to know if you did it for game two.
No, I didn't watch it. My wife came in the next late that night and told me the Astros won.
Okay.
I went down to get. To be honest, I went down to Galveston. I took my wife down to Galveston on 61st Street, and I took a massive piss inside of the Galveston Bay.
Okay. Well, and then I guess that justified he didn't watch. The whole thing was Lamont went on Twitter and blamed Jeremy and I for guilting him into not watching, so he watched game one and they lost, and it was our fault.
That's why the water in Galveston looks like that, I guess. 713-780. I agree with Lamont, by the way. Like, you get to a World Series,
you have two
very good teams. Philadelphia's record, because Joe Girardi had him off to a lousy start. Bryce Harper played 90 games in the regular season, and they're finally playing like they thought they were going to play all year long. 713-780-ESPN. We are talking about Verlander. 713-780-3776. Maybe we'll get to that Fromber sticky stuff, too. But does JV's next start scare you? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.